So I look back at some of the mistakes that I made, George, and some of the good decisions that I made. And I think the most influential business book I ever read was
The Smartest Marketers from All Walks of Life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens. And tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts.
All right, Marketing
Podcast.
Smarts listeners, I'm super excited, but you know what? I feel like you already knew that. However, today, let's triple, quadruple. I don't know what's after quadruple, but I'm sure there's something, the excitement today, because I get to bring back a good friend of mine, somebody that I've worked with for years, Mr. Marcus Sheridan. Today, ladies and gentlemen, you get to hear a conversation around world-class case studies, they ask you answer, and building trust on the internet. Now, I also ask Marcus what keeps him up at night, the hurdles along the way, common myths that he wants to bust. And of course, we talk about the book and all things related. Now, if you don't know, Marcus Sheridan is a highly sought after international keynote speaker known for his unique ability to excite, engage, and motivate audiences. In 2017, Forbes named Marcus one of the 20 speakers you don't want to miss. He has been dubbed a web marketing guru by the New York Times and featured in Inc., The Globe and Mail, Forbes, and many more. As an owner of Impact, Marcus has established one of the most successful digital sales and marketing agencies in the country. Within his speaking company, Marcus Sheridan International, Inc., he gives more than 70 global keynotes annually, where he inspires audiences in the areas of sales, marketing, leadership, and communication. Mashable rated his book, They Ask You Answer, the number one marketing book, and Forbes listed it as one of the 11 marketing books every CMO should read. And I would add in B2B marketer should read if you have not yet. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, enough shenanigans. Let's go ahead and hear from our sponsor and then get into the good stuff. Are you looking for great curated content specific to you, the B2B marketer? Want to have fun while also learning valuable information to help you succeed on a daily basis? Then you're in luck. Look no further. This week's Marketing Smarts podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Smarts Live Show. That's right. You can join us live every Monday where we shine the spotlight on you, the community members, share fresh B2B news, several top-notch curated articles to help you be a better marketer, and of course, have tons of fun along the way. If you want even more B2B marketing education with the ability to ask questions and engage with the rest of the audience, tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the Marketing Smarts Live Show. You won't regret the additional B2B learning you'll be adding to your life. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast. All right, people, buckle up. Again, this is a little bit of a different conversation. Marcus Sheridan, world-class case studies, they ask you answer, building trust on the internet, and what you, as a B2B marketer, should be thinking about. Let's get into the good stuff. All right, I'm super excited because today we're sitting down with the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Marcus Sheridan. Now, Marcus, I'd love to start these interviews with a very interesting question. And this is specifically to B2B marketers. Although I know you, you know me, we'll probably talk about all types of marketers in this podcast episode. But when you think about marketers, B2B marketers, what the heck keeps you up at night?
I think about the amount that truly believe they're different and special when they're not. I'm really specifically referring to, we have this tendency to overcomplicate marketing dramatically. There's a lot of reasons why we do it, but fundamentally, George, I think, if we're being very honest, we want to feel smart. We want to feel special. We want to feel like we're in a really, really unique situation with unique challenges. And these are the things that we say and do. And by the way, this isn't going to get me any friends, but I don't really care about that. I care about creating world-class case studies. That's what I really care about. I go after stories. I want to see killer, unbelievable case studies in every industry. And what I've seen over and over again, George, the ones that boil it down to the most simple of truths in business are the ones that are having the most success. And that, of course, for me, has always been, we're in the business of trust, no matter what we sell. You go to any B2B company, service, product, doesn't matter, and you say, is trust going to be fundamental to your business in 5 years? You're going to say yes, 10 years, yes, 20 years, yes. That's the one thing we know to be true, George. We don't know what's going to happen next with all this other stuff. We don't even know if we're going to have websites in 20 years. Let's be honest, right? We don't know that. I mean, especially at the rate of change right now. But what we know is trust is fundamental. And so when I say they're not special, what I mean is if we listen to someone or read something that is novel, that's new, that challenges our thoughts, and immediately we think to ourselves, that doesn't apply to me because I'm different, and this is the most prolific in the B2B service space and in the SaaS space, then we're going to hold ourselves back from doing something really, really exceptional.
Yeah, and we should always be trying to do something exceptional, especially as marketers. And I want to kick it back to trust in a little bit. I don't want to lose sight of that before we kind of finish up this podcast episode. But you said something, and I know what you mean. You know what you mean. And that is you use the words world-class case studies. Now, a B2B marketer might hear case studies and think they know what we mean. But Marcus, when you say world-class case studies, what exactly do you mean? Like, define that. What is in it? What are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to show? How does that build trust? Like, unpack all of that for us.
Yeah, this boils down pretty much to if someone in an industry does a survey amongst companies or amongst people that are very engaged with that industry and says, who is the go-to source of information in this space? What do they say? Because let me give you an example. If I'm with an audience, George, and I say, let's say a kid or a loved one gets sick, what's the first website you go to? The majority of the people are going to say WebMD. That's just what they say. It's a natural go-to. If you talk to anybody in the swimming pool space, which by the way, we're a B2B2C company because we manufacture and we sell to dealers who sell to the end user with our fiberglass swimming pools, okay? Everybody's going to say River Pools is the go-to source in that space. Now, what's cool is I think there's opportunities always for more than one go-to source. There's always more room on top, right? That's what I mean by a world-class case study, where you're doing things in your space that everybody's talking about. In fact, many of your competitors are complaining because they're like, no, wait, that's not fair. You can't do that. What? Right? That's what we want them saying because we're pushing the envelope. We're forcing everyone else to be more honest, more transparent, more real, give more on the front end. That's what I mean, right? That's a world-class case study. And usually it boils down to just one of essentially three things, right? You got to be willing to talk about what others in your space aren't willing to talk about. You got to be willing to show what others in your space aren't willing to show. And you got to be willing to sell in a way that others in your space aren't willing to sell. Those three things. You do those three things, you're going to become the voice of trust. You're going to lead your industry. Everybody's going to be talking about you, the marketplace, the competitors, etc.
So you just listed out three things, right? Show, sell. Like, when you think about that kind of a matrix that we're throwing out there, is one more important than the other? Like, you know, kind of like when you're running a race, you got to get to point A to point B to point C. Like, which way should B2B marketers run on that kind of trifecta of things that they should be doing? And again, to kind of garnish more trust and build a better world as they go.
We've got tell, show, and sell. Those are the three majors. And I would say that this one likely could vary depending on the niche. But that's always where you start. And oftentimes right now, this is where we're seeing industries turn on their head. Most often we're seeing it with the way we sell. You know, a recent study by Gartner said that 33% of all B2B buyers would prefer to have a seller-free sales experience, okay? And for millennials, that's 44%. And so you might hear that and freak out, and some salespeople might freak out, but this is reality. This is where we are. And so the companies that don't fight against the tide, but rather embrace it, and they say, okay, so our buyers want a seller-free buying experience. What does that really mean? It doesn't mean they hate salespeople. They just don't want to talk to a salesperson until they feel like they are ready, until they feel like they're informed and they're not going to make a mistake. And so let's say you're the first person in your space to have a pricing calculator because you're a B2B service-based business. You're the first one to put a pricing calculator on your website. Now, immediately, a whole bunch of people say, you don't understand, Marcus. That's the first thought, George. That's the first thought. Whereas there's a select few that say, you know what? I bet there is a way. Maybe we do a range for our pricing calculator. Maybe that's the output, which is what we did as a manufacturer that doesn't set the pricing. We had the first pricing calculator as a manufacturer in our industry, right? That's an example of selling differently, but also showing something that no one has shown, talking about something that others aren't talking about. Classic example, pricing calculators. It's all three of them. And yet most listening to this right now, I guarantee you 99.9% of the folks listening to this right now do not have a pricing calculator of any degree on their website. And this is not me just, this is not me ragging on everyone. This is me saying opportunity knocks so loud. If we're just willing to do the little things that no one else is willing to do because it hasn't been done in the space.
Yeah, if you're a B2B marketer, listen to this. You know right now, like, if we don't have that thing, can we make that thing happen? And if we're not telling, showing, or selling in a different way than our competitors, you got action items, people. You got action items. Marcus, I want to circle back to, you mentioned the word trust. And it's interesting because so many times I hear people talk about trust and it feels like they think it's the beginning, where I actually think it's the outcome. It's the thing that happens because of other things. And so what are some other key elements, mentalities? I hate to say strategies, but, you know, just so we can kind of get in the right vein here, that B2B marketers should be paying attention that actually output the trust that they need.
Yeah, there's a few of these. Of course, you've got the basics that you read about and they ask, you answer, right? Which I've been pounding that drum, as have you, for many years now. We have what's called the Big Five, the five subjects that everybody wants to research. And this is absolutely definitively proven to be true in the B2B space. Buyers want to understand cost-based questions. They want to understand negatives or problems. How could this go wrong? How could this blow up in my face? That's a major one that nobody likes to talk about. Comparisons. But comparisons that are honest, okay? Your product versus another product, your brand versus another brand, your method versus another method, okay? I mean, it just goes on and on. But once again, honest, honest. Got to show both sides of the coin. Reviews. The thing about reviews is we want to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. We just don't want the positives, okay? And then finally, number five, best, most, top. Okay, all those. That's what runs the economy of search. It has for over 10 years. It's amazing. It doesn't go away. It's not stopping anytime soon. And so what's great for me and my business model is most still aren't talking about it. So, I mean, I'm going to die talking about the Big Five. And, lucky me, right? Because still people are going to resist this really important truth. There's other principles, though, or strategies, if you will, George. One major one is what we call disarmament, or disarming the reader or the listener. You know, when you're teaching and communicating and you're selling at the same time, people expect you to be biased. So you have to say something early on in the conversation that throws them off, almost makes them flinch and say, "What? I can't believe you said that," right? So, you know, I mean, let's say you're selling a SaaS product, you might say, and I'm just going to act like I'm HubSpot for a second, okay? Let's say I was doing a video, and this video is, you know, something like HubSpot for small business, something, something, something. So I might start that video with, you know, so let's assume you're a small business and you're looking for a marketing automation platform, and you're saying, is HubSpot the best fit for me? Well, even though I'm here at HubSpot, I'm going to be the first to tell you that it might not be the best fit for you. In fact, there could be other options that are more viable for your business. But what this video is going to do, it's going to talk about the pros and the cons of HubSpot, how it works for small businesses, and by the end, hopefully, you'll be able to decide if it's the right fit for you. Now you see, that's incredibly disarming. But how many companies really communicate like that? Not a lot. Not a lot. Not a lot come out the gate and say, you know what? We might not be the best fit for you. But by saying it and truly meaning it, now all of a sudden, everybody's like, wow, I can't believe he said that. So that skill is very, very rare in the marketplace, but it's all based and rooted in psychology.
Love it so much. And I'm glad that you mentioned they ask, you answer, which I agree with you. We'll be talking about that till the day we die. Like, everybody wants to talk about that. And so there's a couple things. If by some strange circumstance, there's a B2B marketer listening to this and they're like, the big what? They, you, who, what, where? How can people get started? How do you get people to go in a journey of they ask, you answer? Is there a right way to go? Is it just grab the book? Like, talk to the listeners about that for a second.
Yeah, well, here's how you know. See, I'm going to disarm right now. Okay, I'm going to disarm first, right? Because it's natural for me. Here's how you know if they ask you, answer aligns with you. If you're thinking to yourself, I want to become the most trusted voice in my space. If that's where you fall, then you should pick up the book. If that is not an obsession of yours, don't pick up the book. Because how it works is, it is a literal framework. It's not some bunch of theoretical, like, here's a good idea for you. No, it's an actual framework by which you can become that voice of trust on the marketing side and on the sales side of your business. And so we know, as I mentioned, we know that there's five fundamental subjects that everybody wants to research before they reach out to the salesperson. Remember how we talked about seller free? I don't want to talk to a salesperson until I feel like I'm informed, until I feel like I'm not going to make a mistake. And that's why we want to understand things like budget. We want to understand things like comparisons, so we get a sense for what's available in the market and the competition and the pricing. All these are the things that we want to understand because, you know, there's a lot riding on a B2B buying decision. It's my job, man. It's my livelihood. It affects my entire company. And, you know, so sometimes we think, I'm not sure if they're going to do the research. You know, it's crazy, George, how much content B2B buyers will consume if it's the right stuff. You know, our typical B2B client, because we help companies, you know, go through this they ask you answer journey. That's really what our business is built upon. And typically for most B2B businesses that we work with, the average customer, once they've done the ask you answer, reads 20 to 30 pages of the website. That's the average. That's the average. Think about that. But yet you talk to most folks in the B2B space and you say, how many pages of your website do you think your typical buyer would be willing to read before they buy? They're going to say 2 to 3. It's actually 10 times that much, except you got to have the stuff that they actually care about and not just bloviate about your product or service.
Tactical sessions, inspirational keynotes, off-the-clock antics, and let's not forget about immeasurable connections. What am I talking about? The B2B Forum, of course. For more than 15 years, the B2B Forum has been the conference where today's leading B2B marketers gather for insights, networking, and laughs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's never too early to plan for success. Join us in 2023 in October for inspiration from B2B marketing experts. And I mean those marketers who walk the walk and know how to talk the talk in a way that you can understand. Get access to real-world actionable insights on the tactics and tools that work today and strategies that stand the test of time. When you say, well, on October 4th, you can join us for the B2B Forum full-day workshop for all access attendees. And on the 5th and 6th, well, spectacular conference shenanigans. That's right. If you head over to the B2B Forum website right now, you can sign up to join us October 4th through the 6th for some amazing education. And guess what? I'll see you next year at the B2B Forum. That's right. I'll be there. Will you? So good. So I want to ask a question, and this is a little bit of a personal question, but I think that the listeners, the Marketing Smarts listeners, will get value out of this because we have been doing They Ask, You Answer for, gosh, almost a decade, which is crazy. Like, before it was a book, right? Talking about it, teaching people about it, making it, you know, work with HubSpot. I love that you played HubSpot there for a minute, by the way. I'll get back to that here in a second. But over the, you know, decade, is there like a common myth that has rose its head around the They Ask, You Answer or the Big Five that you're like, I need to debunk this myth like publicly because people are thinking this way or doing this thing? Like, stop it. Like, is there something that's happened that you didn't expect?
Well, not to beat a dead horse here, but I feel like it's stunning to me how misinterpreted the pricing conversation is. You mention pricing and like everybody thinks immediately, oh, he's saying I've got to put a fixed price on my website. I have never once said that in the history of the world. All I've said over and over again, if you create a pricing page on your site, and especially if you're a SaaS, right? Look at what SaaS companies do. SaaS companies constantly tell me, which by the way, about 50% of SaaS companies from what I've seen put pricing on their website. The other 50% don't, say call to get a quote. Okay, which that by the way is the middle finger of the internet, call to get a quote, but that's beside the point. Let's say they actually put it on there. They're like, yeah, Marcus, we put it on there. No, no, no. Here's what you do. You put this good, better, best, small, medium, large, three-tiered pricing option, and that's your pricing page, and you think you've done something. That actually sucks. You want to commoditize something? Yeah, do that. Because what you should be doing is you should be explaining very, very clearly how value is defined in the marketplace, right? So let me give you an example. If I was HubSpot, and I'm not because they haven't done this, but if I was HubSpot, I would, for example, have a really definitive explanation of how pricing structures look in the marketing automation space. In other words, if you look at most industries, especially in tech, there's different tiers. And so let's say we do have three tiers. Explain what those three tiers look like. What's in that lower tier? What's usually included? What is the average price range for all the options in the marketplace in that tier? What's the next tier up? Once again, what are the typical features you find there? What are the typical price ranges you find there? Because now by doing all these things, George, we're defining value in the marketplace. The other way to explain this is, so two different ways to look at it. You can look at it from a tiered approach, or you can look at it from just five fundamental areas of a pricing page. Number one, what drives cost up in your industry? Number two, what drives cost down? Number three, why are some companies more expensive than others? Number four, why are some companies cheaper than others? And then finally, number five, where do you fall? Okay. So if you do a great pricing page, only 20% of it should be about you and your business. 80% is about the industry. This is the part that everybody tends to still screw up. I could say, and I'm telling you, George, I just said that, and people are still going to take from this conversation. He said, I got to put a fixed price. I don't even know what to do at this point.
Oh, that's funny. But ladies and gentlemen, what I take out of that is if you're not paying attention to your pricing page and adding value and educating folks and doing everything that Marcus said, if your page doesn't do that now, again, action items out of this podcast. That's what we're looking for. So Marcus, I want to circle back around. You were playing HubSpot for a minute, and you said, I might start the video like this. And I just want to touch on the point, how important is video in this tell, show, sell matrix that we talked about a little bit ago?
Well, you know, you talk about just beating drums for long periods of time. Once again, George, you and I were, you know, basically picking people up by their shirts, begging them to do video years ago, before it was cool. It's funny, you have prediction posts at the beginning of every year, right? And I swear, since basically 2014, this is going to be the year of video. Like, what the heck is going on? We're a 10-year run. This is the year of video. I can't stress its importance enough. Most people listening to this right now should have an in-house videographer that they're working for. You should, as a company, be producing at least two videos a week. If you're not producing at least two videos a week as a company, I just feel like either you don't get it or you're lazy. It's one of those two things, because the companies that are doing it, they're crushing it. It's not even close. And 2023, in so many ways, is the year of the short vertical style video. I'm all in on them. I just think they're an absolute, just the algorithm loves it. And it's, you know, the economies of scale. You could take, you know, one 60-second vertical short style video and you can upload it on YouTube short. You can post it on Instagram Reel, Facebook Reel. You can post it on TikTok. And the beauty is, not only do the algorithms love it and the people love it, a couple other benefits come from it. YouTube Shorts actually show up in search engine results. So it's not just this one-hit wonder. It's not like you're slapping it on Twitter and people are never going to see it after 7 seconds. I mean, this is going to be potentially the gift that keeps on giving. The other really, really cool thing about any type of vertical style video is incredibly economical to do, and you do not have to have heavy editing. You don't even have to have heavy skills. If I may, George, let me just say there's three fundamental keys of a world-class short video. And if you just nail these three keys, you're just going to crush with it. Number one, far and away, is you got to create a curiosity gap. What a curiosity gap is when someone says, how does this end? I just want to know, like, what's the payoff here? And that's why we sit around and watch stupid videos until the end. Sometimes we get mad, sometimes we get happy, but we are waiting for the payoff. That's the curiosity gap from the beginning. It starts with your title, and then it occurs with other elements of the video. The second rule is what we call the 5-second rule, which is you should have a cut every 5 seconds when you're producing short style video if you can. So think 3 to 5 seconds, new scene. 3 to 5 seconds, new scene. It's very, very cool like that, and each scene is like a chapter chapter in the story that you're showing, whatever that thing is, all right? So every 3 to 5 seconds, you want to have a cut. And then finally, third rule of great short vertical style video is overcoming the curse of knowledge. And the curse of knowledge is you've got all these things that you do in your business that you take for granted. We all do. And you think the whole world just knows what they are, but they don't. They don't. So let me give you a simple example of how this worked for me. I've got an offshore fishing company in North Carolina, where George lives, and a YouTube channel where we do offshore fishing videos. And I created a video that was, how do you get a 500-pound bluefin tuna into the boat? Now, you're already thinking to yourself, well, I want to know how this ends. I want to see how they get it into the boat. You catch a big fish, how do you get it into the boat, right? And so you're seeing the process of me pulling it into the boat, and you've got these different components of how it's happening. You're watching the fish 1 second, and then you're watching the guys pull levers to pull it in, and then you're watching another person jump on the rope to wiggle the fish through the door, and all these things are happening, and it's like, wow, that's amazing. And then boom, across all four of those channels I mentioned earlier, that got about 5 million views, right? That's how the power of shorts. And you can get incredible gains. As somebody said to me in 2023, what's the quickest way to get awareness? Not necessarily make sales, but awareness for my brand, it would absolutely be shorts. And in the B2B space, still nobody for the most part is doing them. And so that's really, really great. And the reason for that is in the B2B space, what happens, George, we say things like, I don't have a very visual product. I mean, this is kind of boring what we do, right? This is what we tell ourselves. That's the lie. And because of that, we think we don't have this really, really cool thing to show. I mean, that's magic. I just love it when people say our industry is too boring. They used to say all the time to me, like, swimming pools, they're not very sexy. I'm like, what's more sexy than a swimming pool? I mean, this is the home of the bikini. Of course it's sexy, right? But that's what I heard for years from people. It just didn't make any sense to me. When people are spending their money, it's a very sexy industry, period. Okay, you just got to learn to show it better. Tell the story, show the story.
I love that so much. And it's funny, just the amount of people that aren't doing it. Again, Marketing Smarts listeners, if you do it, knowing that not many are doing it, you're going to be able to be more successful with it because the space isn't saturated yet. So I want to circle back around to They Ask You Answer for a hot second, because Marcus, I hear it day in, day out, content is difficult. It's like, it's hard to do content, and they don't sound like that. I'm just sounding like that now for effect, but it is difficult. So when you think about producing content, whether it be textual, video, audio, around the They Ask You Answer topics, are there any tips, tricks, templates, hacks that you and the team have come up over the years to help people actually make it be easier to create that content?
Well, you know, when we say something is hard or easy, it's so relative, right? Because what's hard for one person might be easy for the next. So, for example, there's many organizations right now where you've got great writers that could easily produce a piece of content, but the subject matter experts stink up the joint. They either don't engage the marketing team, they're not availing themselves to the marketing team. And because of that, it's like pulling teeth to get content. Now, is the content difficult? No, it's the team. We have a buy-in problem. If you have a buy-in problem, it means you have a leadership problem. It means leadership hasn't expressed very, very clearly the clear priority of sales and marketing or subject matter experts and marketing working together. That's actually the most common that we see. The other one that we see, George, out there is too many companies think that a piece of content is like the Declaration of freaking independence, and they've got to beat it to death in order to publish the thing, right? You know, Thomas Jefferson cried after he wrote the Declaration of Independence because they changed it so very much. You know, so what we see today wasn't where it started, right? And that's oftentimes what companies do. They're just looking for things to pick apart about the content, which is utterly ridiculous and sad. And so you can't have that mindset. It's got to have a very good enough mindset. And is this easily understood? Does this answer the question? We're not trying to sound smart. We're trying to reach communion, right, with our audience. And so these are major areas. I think another, you know, hack, if you will, I mean, it's not a hack, but you got to have people that are writers on staff, not people that can write. There's a difference. Writers. It's one of those things where, you know, you can sit there and you can pull teeth and you can have the CEO or somebody on the leadership team or the sales manager try to pop out content, or you can just stick them in front of somebody that's asking them questions. 20 minutes later, they got a great piece of content because now they've dumped what's in their head and they've given it to the person that could go out there and produce it because they've got a journalistic skill set. And so I think we still undersell that. That's problematic. And look, I mean, with AI, ChatGPT, there's never been an easier time to create content. Of course, you still got to humanize it. You got to add that personal tone. You got to do it in a first-person style. You got to add those, you know, personal experiences and stories, company stories, experience, customer stories, experiences. But there's no, I just don't think there's any excuse at this point not to be producing content as an organization. I think we should be doing more, not less. I think it's quality and quantity. It's very, very possible to do. It's not an either or. And this, though, is why most companies still, they just want to throw money at a thing and feel good about it and just continue to do paid and all this stuff. And I'm fine with paid advertising, but, you know, great content is the gift that keeps on giving. A great video, a great article, or, you know, whatever the thing is, can continue to sell for you and work for you and develop trust for you 5-10 years down the road. Literally, it's beautiful. It's amazing. And so keep that in mind. I still think most companies, 90%, aren't doing content nearly like they should be, George.
Man, I totally agree with that. And it's interesting because I think about when you talk about creating content and years and years and years of payoff. I mean, you know, you talked about we started creating video back in 2014, which is why on a daily basis, you get people saying things like, man, you've got thousands of videos on the internet. I don't maybe have thousands. But that's the perception. And perception is very key, a piece of like that trust building. Marcus, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about world-class case studies. We've talked about the big five. They ask, you answer. We've talked about content, even down to like video shorts and a little bit of a rubrics that you gave people there. All of this is cool. And we should probably do it all. But how the heck do we know what success looks like on any of these topics? Like, what are we looking for where we can wake up in the morning and go, we're doing it?
I'll tell you what's not by impressions. That's the stupidest metric in the history of the world. I was reading this thing, it was actually this morning, George, where it was like these content awards or something like that. And I was reading like, what was the case study? Like, you know, what had they done that caused them the award? And it's like, generated 9.7 million impressions. I'm like, yeah. And you could still get fired tomorrow if you weren't generating revenue for your organization. I mean, you got to get leads, you got to get sales. I think for marketing, we have to be more responsible overall in terms of recognizing that we've become a revenue-based department. And if we as marketers want to get raises, which we deserve, I believe, if we want to get paid what we should be paid, value how we should be valued, resourced like we should be resourced, we have to prove our value to the organization. And I know sometimes that's easier said than done. You might lack the tools or whatever. But part of being a great marketer is communicating in a clear way that leadership really understands the value. Too many marketers talk like marketers. If you want to be an incredibly successful marketer, you have to speak the language of leadership when you're with your leadership team. You have to speak the language of sales when you're with the sales team. I think this is the one thing that's helped me so very much, George, right? As I've owned my own businesses. I really started as a sales guy for the most part, right? And I got into marketing later on. And so I will switch the language at any point in time, depending on who I'm talking to. And this way it resonates. Again, we're never trying to sound smart. We're not trying to distance ourselves. It's dumb not to dumb it down. The smartest marketers in the world know this. We're not trying to sound smart. I'm not trying to look smart on video. I'm not trying to sound smart on article. I'm not trying to sound smart today as we're having this conversation, George. You know, you do this. You're very good at this. I, you know, pride myself in this. We're just trying to be understood. That's the essence of great marketing. Now, you asked a question at the beginning of this. I don't even remember what it was because I went on a little bit of a tangent there. But, you know, these are strong feelings that I have. And I think if you want to separate yourself from your peers, you got to remember these points.
Yeah, no, I think you actually answered the question. It was, you know, what does success look like? How do you know that you're actually, you know, doing it? And that was a great answer. Marcus, as we kind of land the plane here, you know, I started with what keeps you up at night. I like to end with the words of wisdom. And so this could be about life. This could be about the topics at hand that we've been talking about. But what are the words of wisdom that you'd want to share with the Marketing Smarts listeners today?
So I look back at some of the mistakes that I made, George, and some of the good decisions that I made. And I think the most influential business book I ever read was Good to Great, and by Collins. And the reason why Good to Great really hit me. It emphasized this silly analogy of the hedgehog concept. And of course, hedgehogs don't do many things well at all, but what they do really well is they roll up in a ball and they protect themselves. And so therefore, they live a long time. And that's the hedgehog. So I started seeing everything from a what can I have as my hedgehog? And a hedgehog is essentially what can you be the best in the world at? You know, you still got to enjoy and love it. But what can you be the best in the world at that can drive your economic engine? And so from a marketing perspective, we should have our hedgehogs. You have to ask yourself as a marketer, what can we, in terms of our marketing department with our particular organization, brand, etc., what can we be the best in the world at? So back in the day at River Pools, at first I said, okay, I can be the best in the world at producing written content about fiberglass swimming pools. I didn't do anything with social media at all, George, if you can believe that. I was just producing written content. And then I said, okay, we're rolling here. We're crushing. Let's add video. And so we started adding video. And it was specific to YouTube. We still weren't doing social media. We weren't messing with it. And so we were clearly just focused in on what could we be the best in the world at. We had a particular style. That's what we were doing. We weren't trying to be all things to everyone. You know, if you try to be a jack of all marketing trades, there's a very good chance you're going to be a master of none. So say, what can we be a master of one with first? Let's master that. Let's become great at it. And then let's move to the next thing. That's one recommendation. So make sure you read Good to Great, Jim Collins. It's one of those that you should read probably once a year if you're in business.
So, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you take lots of notes? I have to ask, what is your hashtag one thing, your number one execution opportunity after this podcast? Make sure you reach out and let us know in my inbox or on Twitter using the hashtag MPB2B. Also, I have to ask, are you a free member of the Marketing Profs community yet? If not, head over to mprofs.com/MP today. You won't regret the additional B2B marketing education you'll be adding to your life. Hey, listeners, we'd like it if you could leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app, but we'd love it if you'd share this episode with a coworker or friend. Until we meet in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts podcast, where we talk with Chris Carr about ChatGPT. Marketing dream or marketing disaster? I hope you do just a couple of things. One, reach out and let us know what conversation you'd like to listen in on next. Two, focus on getting 1% better at your craft each and every day. And finally, remember to be a happy, helpful, humble B2B marketing human. And we'll see you in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast.